Welcome back. This is episode 35 of the Next Step Radio Show, part 6. And this will be the conclusion to our 6-part series on the Sacred Science Super Subway Sandwich. Put a lid on this thing. Let's get right back into it with Crystal Clark.
I had one sub-question to the reincarnation past lives theme that I forgot to poke in there that I want to mention again before I totally forget. Have you in your research or your own intuition? I myself wonder sometimes if birthmarks aren't scars from a previous life. A traumatic injury to the physical body that somehow carried through the spiritual realm and back into the next life for either, a badge of honor or a reminder or a hint at what lessons are to be remembered. Do you have any thoughts on big outstanding birthmarks in that regard?
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's a book that I recommend in the study guide that talks about this because a lot of people don't believe that there really is physical evidence for reincarnation, but there is, and there's quite a bit of it. In some cases, it's just a matter of a child who will around the age of 2 or 3, still remember their old family and cry to be taken back to the old family. They remember the names, they remember the places, they remember where they lived, and if the family is brave enough to take the child back to the place that the child remembers, they do find people living with those names, living family members that the child had in another life. And another really interesting thing that came up through that same line of research was those scars. If people had wounds in another life, this is another form of imprinting. If it was very traumatic, then, yeah, in this particular life, you can be born with a scar exactly where the wound was in the old life. And it's really kind of funny because I tease my husband about this because he has this really huge birthmark on his leg. And we're really big on jokes around here. And we kind of play jokes on each other. And sometimes when he's sleeping really deep, I'll draw a big smiley face on it. just to mess with him. But I tease him about that. He must have had a severe wound in a past life because that's usually what those are. That's exactly what they are.
Because I have, somebody I know with a significant birthmark in the neck region, and the same person also has what I initially thought or would classify as an irrational fear of strangulation, but then, one day I kind of just reflected on that for a second, and it's kind of neither here nor there, but I thought maybe the two were related. And also, from a solution standpoint, when people, let's say, have an irrational fear of strangulation and a birthmark on their neck, maybe they could correlate that for themselves, and not only notice that, do-overs are possible, that as traumatic as that, injury was in a past life, they're okay now. You can live again and not get strangled in that example. But it's, like I said, it's kind of a minor issue, but there are multiple occasions I've ran across that. And when I think of reincarnation in past lives, that seems to bubble up to the top. And for whatever it's worth, it may or may not help somebody, but I thought it was worth mentioning, at least in the reincarnation category.
Oh, sure, yeah. And in fact, I think that was the exact proper term, is irrational fear. Because if you have not had an experience in this life with it, why do you have the fear? And a lot of it does go back to past lives. And that does help people, too, through regression therapy, because in fact, in this life, I know a person who has all their life had a fear of drowning. And they went through regression therapy and they found out that they drowned in a past life. And that's where it was stemming from. So it does help to kind of go back through that for some people. And I think what's important about that is, some people, what really hangs them up about reincarnation, which is a really... a really big part of what's going on down here, and I think that people miss why that's so important if they can't understand it. But a lot of people think, well, it's so cruel that we don't remember. You know, why do we have to start over? And I think that when you find people like this child, this example I gave with the child that was crying to be taken to its old family, that's the kind of thing that you get if there's imprinting, if there is a trauma that you bring in from the past life, because that's not supposed to happen. We're not supposed to bring that with us. This is the do-over. You start fresh. You start new again. So I think it's actually a gift that we do get to start over, and we do get to, you know, kind of have a clean slate, because it can be very difficult not to. And I think that it's a very kind and loving universe that does that for us, because forgiving ourselves can be a very, very difficult thing. And I see this a lot. I see it in family members who were in Vietnam, who are substance abusers. They have very, very difficult lives because they participated in something that was horrific and it scarred them, and they cannot forgive themselves for it. And you know, I think that it may seem strange, I know, that we're talking about relationships when the bulk of my work is the sacred science. You know, why is all of this so important? It's important because if we are scarred and incomplete, so are our contributions. Because I really liked the show that you did with Paranoid, where you stated that life is a big hall of mirrors. And it really, really is. We get back what we put out, and yeah, we have to change what's going on in the outside world, but the fastest way to do that is to change the inside, because the outside is a reflection of the inside. That's where it stems from. So I know that people get irritated when, you know, they hear people say, really the best and most important thing you can do if you really want to make a difference is to work on self. But that's really true, and that example that I gave of the woman who was so cruel to all these, you know, beautiful little five-year-olds, she was scarred and incomplete, and she was scarring other people because of it. And so her outer world, which my son was a part of, was a reflection of her inner world. And there is a feedback loop. Everything is connected to everything else. So when you change one thing, you change all the others.
The easiest part of that change is oneself. And in, you know, these days of weather manipulation and nuclear weapons and newfangled, you know, exotic weapons and illegal wars and phony currency, you know, everybody's trying to figure out the best way to tackle that beast. But, you know, the best way to tackle that beast is to prepare yourself, and so much of the stuff, you know, that seems undefeatable, it may or may not be, but the immediate control that lies closer to home, it is relationships. We have relationships with the New World Order somehow. You know, we have relationships with, you know, Black Ops, you know, budgets somehow. And those are seemingly separated by various layers or levels in the pyramid, but you know, there's still relationships that require, whether it's the victim perpetrator, you know, paradigm, or the daddy child paradigm. A lot of those are easier to focus properly, since so much of it is based on deceptions and illusions, if you focus on your actual, you know, daddy child paradigm, whether it's, you know, your father to you or you to your son, or the victim you know, perpetrator paradigm relationship with, you know, the TSA or whatever. You know, those are easier to frame and tackle once the perpetrator and or victim in your life, you know, if those can be framed properly closer to home, the easier it gets as you move up the fractal or the scale or the octave or what have you. So it may seem odd that, you know, sacred science and esoteric discussions boil down to marriage and parenting and birthmarks, but ultimately they are connected, and if you know, one were to focus and frame it properly, the connections are highly apparent, and tackling the big stuff becomes quite easy once all the little stuff is squared away, or, you know, dealt with on a closer basis. And then, you know, from an energetic level, you know, you can have, we can come together, you know, on the macrocosm to battle the chemtrail issue if we're not, you know, fighting with our spouses, you know, and irrational misbehaving children and poor diets and things. So yeah, fixing the circle close to you is the best way to ultimately tackle that seven-headed hydra or whatever it is.
Yeah, and you know, the TSA is a really good example, because a lot of people that they hire, I'm sure you've heard about this, they take these personality tests. They're looking for a certain type of personality.
Right.
And they're looking for people that are on a power trip. Well, what kind of things have to happen in a person's life that they have not reconciled? Who have they not forgiven that they are on a power trip? That there are people that can meet the guidelines that they're looking for. Why are there people like that? And, I mean, like, I personally couldn't do a job like that. But there are people who can. But why? You know, what kind of damage has been done that they have not taken the time to heal, that they are participating because it helps them avoid dealing with it in terms of forgiveness? You know, a lot of people say, well, love is the only truth. And you know, there's a great deal of truth to that. And I'm not saying that you can just go hug a TSA agent and they'll quit their job. But again, it's like we were talking about earlier, when people are cruel, that's their way of letting you know that somebody has wronged them somehow. That's their way of telling you. And if you reciprocate the cruelty, then you're feeding the cycle. So when we're kind to our fellow man, we get to help them see that there is compassion in the world, that there is another way, and that they don't have to continue living that way. And it's through those simple, simple kinds of things that the ripples carry out.
God bless them, because I wouldn't want to be a TSA agent. No, you know, I'd find a puppy to kick or something. I don't know if I could inspect diapers for plastic bombs or whatever.
Yeah, and really, yeah, you know, what we really need right now is bravery. Never ever in the history of humanity have we ever needed our fellow man to be brave, and we need them to be brave all the way around. We need them to look at the darker side of themselves, understand where it came from, heal, move on, and become a productive member of the new future. That's really important. So asking people to be brave is not just about, you know, go get your gun and your underground shelter and go hide. That's not the kind of bravery I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kind of bravery that's out of love, not fear. You know, yeah, there's a lot of awful stuff going on, but the reason that it's important to me to try to help people understand what they can do to correct it is because these people, all these people that don't understand what you and I understand, deserve to be given the time to understand it the same way that we were given the time to understand it. So when I talk about, you know, HARP this or GMO that or whatever, what I'm really saying is, look, life can't continue if we continue this path. And I'm not saying that because I want you to do something about it out of fear. I want you to do something about it out of love, because whether or not these people love themselves doesn't mean that I don't love them.
Right.
You know, they need that time. They deserve the time that we had to sort through it all, because it does take time.
As more and more people, you know, catch on, in one of your more recent interviews, you were discussing the 100th monkey syndrome. Or is it a syndrome? I guess the 100th
monkey, now?
The 100th monkey scenario or story or what have you, sparked my curiosity. I love numbers, the work Michael Schneider has done with numbers. In the physical representation, like the eight, And people can Google or search engine Michael Schneider and the Beginner's Guide to Constructing the Universe from 1 to 12. And they'll get a good grip on it. Or you can just think about the number 8 and how it's the representative of, you know, the infinity symbol. And how things, you know, feed back on themselves. And they're circular in motion, but there's, an intercession or a middle point between the two equal and opposite evolutions. In the context of the magic number 8 and the 100th monkey syndrome scenario, what are your thoughts on 8 billion people as far as the collective consciousness, how, you know, human thought and consciousness perceives? And, you know, is it the root, obviously, of what humans, you know, call life? Do you think there's any significance to the coming 8 billionth person on the planet, you know, like the 100th monkey?
Well, I don't know. You know, the 100th monkey, what's interesting about that story is they didn't actually know how many monkeys it took before it became in the consciousness of all the monkeys.
Right.
They just assumed, let's just say it's the 100th monkey. So I don't really know. But, you know, it's like anything else, even car insurance, for example. The more people you have, if you live in a larger city, the more people you have, the higher your rates are, because the higher the probability you're going to get an accident just because there's more people.
Right.
So I would say that, yeah, the more people there are, the faster we will probably hit the number just out of, you know, sheer volume.
Correct.
Right? So I don't really know what the number is, but there definitely is a threshold that can be crossed. And I think that we're creeping up on it, I have to be honest. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it because, you know, even when I wrote the book, it took me a few years to write it because, I wrote it while I was on my journey, and it took a few years. You know, it's not something you can just snap your fingers and make happen. But even then, trying to tell people about chemtrails and HAARP was ridiculous hard. I mean, but now... I don't know a lot of people that really don't know about it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's just in a very short period of time. So I see that things are escalating. Things are going faster. So, I don't know, Jacob, but people are waking up faster and faster and faster. And, of course, it's like that Marvel story. You know, that one guy, supposedly in the story, the mean boss, not only affected his wife and her and the 15 kids that she had in class, but also their 30 parents. But imagine if this her boss was helping people understand something good, and there were 100 of him,
right,
affecting 30 people. And that's really how it happens. And then all of those people that he affected are now him doing the same thing. So it spreads really fast. So I'm really excited about it. I mean, like I said, I know that, the New World Order or Shadow or, you know, whatever you want to call it, I know that it has an agenda, but I think that they're running into an awful lot of interference, and I don't think they're sure where it's coming from, but I'm pretty sure that it's coming from us, and I think it's irritating them. But you know, what happens is it's kind of like a wave that goes up in the air. You have one side pushing up, and then you have the other side pushing up, and at some point it's going to have to fall one way or the other. And that's kind of where we're at. We're in that moment where the wave is lifting up, and the faster we wake up, the more interference they're going to have, which means the harder they're going to push, you know.
Which will in turn wake more people up even faster.
Well, I mean, it's already moving. You can't stop it once it starts.
Right.
That's the thing. The only way you can stop it is through population control. I mean, if you could get it to a point where you could eliminate the number of people, you could stop it that way to a degree. But I know they've tried some things, and they just aren't working. And I think that's pretty cool. You know, I can't remember where I came across it, but you're familiar with the placebo effect, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
And... From what I understood, in order for a drug to be marketed as having any kind of actual ability to do anything, and has to have a greater effect than the placebo effect. But what's really irritating drug companies right now is that the placebo effect is actually having more of an effect than the pills.
Right.
So they actually got to a point where they started just flat out telling people, this is sugar, it's not going to do anything for you. But it still did. So that's another indicator. I think the indications are everywhere that we're definitely cresting.
No, yeah, I see it everywhere I go. You know, and it's exciting. It's definitely not boring. I mean, all you got to do is wake up and look around. And the rate with which, I think that's also going to work out in our favor. You know, once you tell a lie, you've got to tell another lie to support that lie. And now you have two lies, so you got to come up with four more to cover those two. So the rate with which the, you know, controllers, let's say, are spitting out lies is so rapid that they're almost getting humorous with the, whether it's Osama bin Laden or, you know, the multiple birth certificates or Donald Trump, or just, you know, the political realm is, they cannot spit out the lies fast enough to cover the old lies, and that's going to collapse in on itself, you know, at a pretty astonishing rate, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it already is. I mean, how long did it take from the release of that birth certificate before people had it completely torn apart? I mean, I don't, what, 10 hours maybe?
It was about 12 hours when I went specifically looking for a YouTube video that had already proved that it was altered. And in that 12 hours, I found one, but there was multiple there, so it was, you know, less than half a day.
Yeah, I don't think they expected that. I mean, I think that they expected eventually somebody would figure it out, but people are on it. You know, they really are on it, and I think what's so great about it is that, you know, people are learning that everybody has a place. Everybody has something to contribute. I don't use that kind of software. I'm not one of those people who could tear it apart, but I could certainly understand when people showed me what they were talking about. You know, you have people that are talking about HARP. You have people that are talking about GMOs. You have people that are talking about free energy. Everybody is kind of moving into the positions that they were meant to fill when they came here in terms of their dharma. And that is so powerful. I mean, if you think about it, it's like this really well-oiled machine that just didn't work before because the parts weren't in place. You know, they were kind of still scattered out in the driveway. You know, the transmission was over here and the motor was over here and, you know, the tires were over here. But they're slowly moving into position, and it's really awesome what we can do when we work together, even though we're individuals. You know, we don't have to all do the same thing. We didn't come here to all do the same thing the same way. Everybody is unique and individual in that sense. But we're put here not just to take, but to give to the upliftment of humanity through the gifts we came here with. And people are beginning to move into that part of their lives and fulfill that. So the machine, I can see the gears, they're cranking. It's picking up some speed, and it's really pretty awesome. And I think, you know, what was so great for me on my journey is that I was not, as a child, indoctrinated into religion. I wasn't indoctrinated. I didn't learn the sacred science through science. I didn't learn it that way. I learned it in a very, very different way. I learned it by reading all of this different stuff from every field you can imagine, you know, genetics, gene therapy, past life regression, ancient civilizations, I mean everything. I looked at everything. And then when I went through the download phase, I realized, I understood why everything is connected. And I think that as long as we understand moving forward that I don't get to say you don't matter because you're the transmission and I'm a tire, right?
Yeah.
I don't get to say I'm more important than you are because the car is not going to go anywhere if the two of us aren't on it. And I think that's really important in terms of breaking down the walls that still separate people, because that's a big, big part of why we are where we are, is that we've not only done that, but but we've encouraged it, repeated it, and allowed it. And we need to get to the place where we understand that it's all right to be an individual. It's all right to look at the same thing. And you say potato, I say potato. It's the same thing, as long as we can understand that. You know, I know that, you know, some researchers really like string theory. Some researchers really like, you know, the quantum field theory. Some researchers really like the electric universe model. Some people really like religion. That, you know, what I learned, the way I learned it, was that there is beauty in all of them, in all of them, because I understood their connection and how they're all really trying to say the same thing at their core. But if we get lost in the details, I think that's where we run into problems and we build the walls back up, you know. You know, part of quantum theory is the transference or transformation of energy. Well, you can see that right away in Masaru Emoto's work. There is a transference of energy. It's. I mean, that's, even though that's a technology, yes, we've been talking about it a lot so far in terms of relationships, like with the marble story. There is a transference of energy. It happens. And, yeah, maybe quantum theory has some faults, but I can see that one beautiful part of it and understand why other people are drawn to it. You know, as far as superstring theory goes, when I learned superstring theory, it's actually kind of a funny story because I had this book called The Elegant Universe, and the universe pointed me in this direction, and I read the book over and over, and I just couldn't get it. And so I actually slept on it because Edgar Cayce used to do that. I don't know if you know that.
Right.
He used to sleep on books and absorb their information. And I thought, well, you know, what do I have to lose? I'll try it. And for 2 nights, I slept on the book. And then after the second day, I had this huge epiphany because of something really beautiful that was in this book. And it's what taught me to understand entanglement. And actually, I'm going to read it because I think it's so beautiful. And this was in the first book. Because even if, you know, people want to argue, well, maybe superstring theory isn't perfect. But this is really beautiful. This is from Chapter 6, and it's entitled Nothing But Music, The Essentials of Superstring Theory. And it says, music has long since provided the metaphors of choice for those puzzling over questions of cosmic concert. From the ancient Pythagorean music of the spheres to the harmonies of nature that have guided inquiry through the ages, we have collectively sought the song of nature in gentle wanderings of celestial bodies and the riotous fulminations of subatomic particles. With the discovery of superstring theory, the microscopic landscape is suffused with tiny strings whose vibrational patterns orchestrate the evolution of the cosmos. Now, I thought that was absolutely beautiful because I get the entanglement and I get the music part of it. I get why he chose that. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's beauty in everything. You know, the Heavenly Father, people get tweaked out about that, but really it stems from a time when people understood that this field, whatever you want to call it, it's alive, it's conscious, and it's from the source from which everything comes. And I think that if we can get to a place where we can take the walls down and understand that there's beauty in everything and that everybody has something to contribute, I think that we can do some real magic, and I think that we can really hit that 100th monkey number fast.
Right.
Because then we're not fighting over, well, you know, just for an example, it's one thing to fight over, well, I'm more important than you because I'm the steering wheel and you're the tire. It's another thing to say, well, I want to fancier tire. I mean, who cares? You know what I mean? We can get there on a tire. Who cares what kind of tire it is? I mean, you know, so it's that kind of thing. So I think that's really important because people are killing each other over stuff that just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
And can be solved as we move through it. You know, I think so much of the divide and conquer strategy that's been, you know, foisted upon us to, you know, separate races and genders and religions and pit them against each other.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, I mean, I talk about that a lot. It's important for me to meet people on common ground. So if I know that somebody believes they understand, or however you want to look at it, or is really into super string theory, I can use that phrase, that paragraph, to help them see the way I see it. I can meet them there. Or if it's the quantum field that people access, then I can use their understanding of patterns and that are in the field in terms of how to repattern energies, and from there you can get into the waveforms. You know, it's just important to try to find a way to meet people on common ground and focus on the similarities. Where do you see eye to eye? And then you can begin building a future that everybody can and should be part of.
Right. When the controllers put us all in these separate camps and said, all right, now get each other, and everybody started fighting over, you know, the perceived differences, I think as we move through, you know, these current issues and into, you know, better times, we can take that seeming, you know, like we were talking about earlier, forgive the controllers for dividing us into camps. Take what we learned from being in separate camps and then bring them all back together for some, you know, gigantic, beautiful amalgamation. Because, you know, I think also, like our parents were just doing the best with their set of circumstances and not, you know, specifically directing any ill will towards, you know, the siblings, this generation. I think it's the same is true with a lot of, you know, the researchers from, you know, Rene Descartes, all the way up to Tesla, or even, you know, currently everybody trying to crack the free energy nut, that this whole line of great thinkers were doing the best with their given set of circumstances. Some were indoctrinated with Christianity. Some were indoctrinated with, Muslim, foibles. You know, some were university trained. Some were divinely inspired. You know, none of them had the internet to compare and contrast what everybody else was doing. So they were kind of all working in this bubble. And though, you know, none of them got it 100%, were any of them working for the dark side? Maybe, maybe not. But even if they were, we should still probably forgive them, because, we know the dark side does things like, you know, dangle children upside down with butcher knives nearby in coercion tactics, or, you know, various sorts of blackmail. Just like with your button story, you know, you come across an intelligent guy who, you know, needs some money for his family, you know, and so he works for the NSA for 18 months, you know, trying to crack a code. He was doing it to help his family, you know, and the NSA took his research, you know, and made a weapon that could particleize the, World Trade Center or whatever, but that wasn't his intent. You know, he was doing the best with his, so the forgiveness even plays in there. And like you said, instead of pointing out where everybody went wrong, each of them had a little piece of the puzzle, because what would, Einstein's work be without Descartes' screw-ups? You know, and what would Tesla's work be without Edison's screw-ups? You know, so all of these were, you know, building blocks, you know, towards what we're all looking for. And instead of implementing the divide and conquer strategy, if we did, what would be the opposite? Multiply and liberate or something? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, what you said about being a victim of their circumstances, what we have to understand is that we are, as individuals, co-creating those circumstances. And I get that people say, well, if we just turn away from all of this, what about all the jobs that people will lose? I mean, if everybody stopped drinking Coke, What about all the people that work for Coke? And I talked quite a bit about this at the end of the book because I understand that people, you know, for now, are hooked on money. I get that. But I think one of the fastest ways to get people beyond that, for every company that goes down that we don't need, there needs to be somewhere else for these people to go where they can contribute to a positive future that doesn't have anything to do with the old stuff. And so, yes, we are a victim of our circumstances, but we are also creating those circumstances, and I think that's really important. You know, one of the things, I talked about him earlier, this Ralph Ring, who was talking about this ether technology and Tesla and magnetism, and a fellow named Otis Carr. He said something that I thought was so beautiful. Him and his partner, Otis Carr, in the story had actually went to the car companies because they could create floating cars. And they told the car company, I think it was GM, that they could do this, and they wanted to, you know, give the idea to GM and have them manufacture it. And GM told them that if they ever built them, they would shoot them down. And after this, they got their stuff confiscated because whoever it was, Men in Black, actually, it's kind of funny, told them that it was treason because they were trying to overthrow the monetary system because, and this is really important, what Ralph and his partner tried to explain to these people from GM is that if you could do things like this, you could make life so much simpler that instead of people running around worrying about how they're going to pay their bills, they would have time to remember who they really were.
Right.
And that is the truth. That is the absolute truth. And I just thought it was so beautiful. But these car guys were like, well, yeah, but you're talking about, you know, the end of the oil industry, and we have all the, in the automotive industry, and we have all these factories and all these people and all these jobs, and you just can't do that. So they chose money over the kind of reality we should have wherein people have the time they need to remember who they really are. And so, yeah, if we can get these technologies going, yeah, we can do it in a way where there's a transfer of the energy or transfer of the money, I guess we could say, from one industry into another. So you wouldn't lose it. But even down this path, you would eventually get to a place where people would get, they would understand you don't need money because it bypasses all of the natural systems. It's completely artificial. But I just thought it was incredible that back then, this man understood how important that was. If you could get people out of the grind, the rat race, you know, the stuff that doesn't matter, then they would have time to evolve.
I had heard an interview one time with Webster Tarpley, who's a, you know, a world famous, you know, New World Order researcher type. He's written several unauthorized biographies on, you know, the last couple presidents and what have you. And I heard him in an interview going over, you know, somebody said, okay, well, if all this is true, you know, then what's the solution? And he was like, yeah, you know, you hear people talk about, you know, like getting off the grid and all that kind of crazy stuff. He goes, to do what? And I thought, oh, man, what do you mean to do what?
I know, right?
I mean, do you really want to go down that road? Let's see. Create a whole new way of existence. How's that for starters? You know, if we didn't have these jobs and bills and the economy and the credit cards, you know, what are we going to do? Anything else is the start.
Well, I mean, I can rattle off a list of about 1,000 things right away. We can fix the planet. We can feed all the starving people. We can take care of the homeless people. We can heal disease. We can, you know, we could build floating cities, which I think would be really cool, you know.
Right.
Just like this guy said, I mean, there would not be any more limitations because we would have the time we need to just discover self, discover self's connection, discover the truth of the world that we live in. I mean, people don't even understand this planet, and they're so ready to go to the other planets. Oh, I can't wait to go to Mars. Well, you know, have you ever seen the Grand Canyon? I mean, Have you swam in the ocean? Have you swam with dolphins? Have you really experienced this place? Do you really understand how beautiful it is, how magnificent it is? You know, you can't go scuba dive on Mars. You know, there's a lot of really neat stuff here, and we don't even understand this planet because they don't even teach proper science anymore. You know, my husband was at a customer's building today, and what he went there to do, it wasn't ready, so he was hanging out in their lobby watching television. He was telling me about watching this show about the Dust Bowl. I think it was in the 1920s and 1930s. There was some really neat stuff about that. He said they admitted in the show that they started cloud seeding to make it rain back then, which I thought was really interesting. But another thing that I thought was really interesting about it is he was saying how the dirt became supercharged electrically, and that when these farmers would go out with their metal hose, he was laughing. He said it would literally knock them out. They would get shocked so hard. They'd stick their hole in the ground and wake up a couple minutes later on the, you know, in the dirt. Why does that happen? Do people know? I mean, you know, it's just a really magnificent place. I mean, there are species of animals and fish that we still haven't discovered yet.
No, absolutely. I've got, before I talk about the new cave system found in Vietnam, the cloud seeding thing, I've been on this one for a while. And actually, in the Civil War, they figured it out. They thought at the time, so the story goes, that all of the cannon fire, the booms were related to thunder and lightning, which was in turn making it rain. But it was actually all the condensation nuclei, the artificial particulates that were floating around from the, you know, massive series of explosions that, you know, were unheard of and unnatural, that they could actually make it rain. So they figured that out in the Civil War. They thought it was more to do with the concussion of the gunpowder. But they knew repeated cannon fire up through the sky over and over and over and over could make it rain. So that's interesting that they admitted on a television show that in the 20s, you know, they were seeding clouds, because I've read all the way back to the Civil War, they were onto it, let's say. But yeah, undiscovered stuff. I recently ran across a story about a cave system in Vietnam. The opening on one end was, you know, barely big enough to crawl through. And the cave system on the inside was so fantastic that I don't even, it would be a whole nother show to describe it, but this thing, the largest cavern inside the cave system, I think they said could hold 5 city blocks in New York. I mean, this thing is just unreal. It's huge. There's a full-on river. There's a mini jungle where at one point an opening in the top of the cave lets enough sunlight through that in this huge cave, right under the hole where the sunlight reaches, is a little mini jungle and all these various life forms. But the natives to that part, since there was a river and a waterfall and such massive air movement, that the opening that they knew about was so small that when the wind would move around in there separate from the air systems on the outside, it would make such a whistle or a howl that the superstitious native types dared not go anywhere near it. That it was that dramatic of a whistle. But yeah, so that's just one little bitty cave in Vietnam that's been populated for tens of hundreds of thousands of years, and just recently they found this thing that our modern city blocks could fit inside. So yeah, there's so much here unexplored. Whatever's under the ice in Antarctica, and with topography like Indonesia and Indochina and Micronesia and Polynesia and all of those systems and island chains that have either been sunken down and or are rising up, depending on your point of view, or probably a combination of the two. Just imagine that, just the cave systems themselves in there. Was there a crater, I think, in one of the jungles in the Congo that was so remote that it had never been explored, and they found something like 13 entirely new species of animals in just this one crater in a cave or in the jungles of the Congo? Yeah, so there's so much. You know, the North and South Pole argument. You know, how are there holes there? Are there not? Let's go look. That seems like the easy answer. Put Mars and the moons of Saturn on hold for a second, and let's figure this one out. We've got plenty of time, you know, and like we've discussed, if you screw it up, we're going to get plenty more time. But let's do it right this time. Let's figure this one out. Let's figure, you know, just like the scale of figuring yourself out, you know, extrapolate that to the planet. You know, let's figure this planet out before we go ruin, dominate, buy, or sell the next one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, instead of planning World War III, why don't we plan the excavations of the seabeds and see what we find?
Yeah, no kidding.
Right? Have you seen the satellite images? You know there are cities down there.
Absolutely. The one off Japan. And have you seen, well, it's kind of like the Nazca lines, but there are, let's say, astrological or astronomical carvings, etchings, mounds. It's hard to tell, but this the scorpion north east of Japan and southwest of Alaska, if you get a decent satellite image from up above far enough, I mean, there is not a holographic geo possible scorpion-like thing. There is a Nazca lines type carved or mounded scorpion on the ocean floor. So did that once reside above ground or above the sea level? Did it sink? Did an underwater? You know, yeah, there's so many mysteries. Have you seen the island in the Caribbean that's shaped like the skull and crossbones?
Yeah, I saw that on Google Earth.
You know, and even thinking about that, there's a researcher. Oh, I'd sent you a link. I can't ever remember his name because it's odd, and he lives in Canada, and it's hyphenated. But when people say it all together, it kind of sounds like one first name. But anyway, he's basically the Antarctica is Atlantis guy. As a subcomponent to his research, he has all these other maps that have existed from, you know, way back when. And that leads me to think, you know, have we discovered all the islands out there? You know, is there not a Hawaii-sized something, you know, off where shipping, you know, routes don't go? I mean, yeah, there's so much here left to explore. I don't, for a split second, think we've been everywhere. And, you know, they say space is the final frontier, or, you know, the poles are the final frontier. Well, apparently, you know, Vietnam cave systems aren't even frontiered yet, so slow down, people.
Yeah, yeah, there's so much here that we haven't explored, and I think that's where we have to be careful. When we approach all of this, it's really important not to do it from an egocentric place, because that's where the walls go back up.
Right.
That's where the division continues. That's where the wars continue. If we can just meet people on common ground and begin to bring down the walls, then we can really explore this planet, and we can stop the wars, we can stop the nonsense. You know, overpopulation is such a ridiculous myth, because there are 1,000 different technologies you can use to produce massive quantities of food in a small space.
Right.
We just don't use them because nobody knows about them. So, you know, that's not really even an issue. We could just get past all of this and just I mean, I can't even tell you how many things we could do. I can't believe people who say, well, what are we going to do, sit around and contemplate our own belly button? Well, you might. Well, I can think of a whole bunch of other things I'd like to do if we could get past all of this, right? And part of letting go of the ego is, you know, the university system, where they're still trying to hold on to antiquated views of archaeology. And it just doesn't make any sense. And another thing that's really cool, I think, is that if we can get over the hump and make it to the next stage, you can call it ascension, you can call it whatever you want, if we can get over this, if we can get through it and make it to a type one civilization, and I mean get to the place where we are part of the galactic community, imagine that.
Right.
Imagine when we actually get to interact with these people on a daily basis, what we could learn once we prove that we're at a stage where we can appreciate it. So, I mean, it's really mind-blowing to me what we're giving up for money. I just don't understand it, you know?
Yeah, the harder you look at it, it seems like what we're giving up is basically all possibilities.
Yep, that's exactly where the road goes. Nowhere. And it goes fast. And we are hurling towards it. And so I think that, you know, people need to understand that we're at that fork in the road. We need to choose which path we're going to take, because if we don't, it's going to be chosen for us based on inaction, because there are already actions in place that are choosing one of those forks. But again, the bravery isn't out of fear, it's out of love, because, I mean, look at everything we just talked about. Who wants to give that up, right? Does that make sense? To not experience all of that, it just doesn't make sense. And I think that if we can just keep the planet healthy and balanced long enough to get through the new energies that are coming in, so that we can have that too, because there's that too. We have new energy coming in. So you're talking about a new building block for creation. So you're talking about some really neat evolutionary possibilities on top of all of this. So I think it's important that people work on self, understand their connection to the outer world, really try to understand who they are in terms of what they came here to give, and don't be afraid to actually do it and try it. You know, don't worry about whether or not you're a professional or if you've had training, because your training, it's in your program, it's in your genes, it's in your astrological sign, it's in your, you know, your genetic imprinting. I mean, you already have it all. That's why you came here with it. That's what it's for. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited. I know that we have a ways to go, and I know that a lot of people are at a place where they're so frustrated, they just want to get it over with. In terms of, you know, if there's going to be a war, well, just let's just do it. And I think that if we're really vigilant about making sure that we're kind to each other, that we meet each other on common ground, that we continue to share what we know and help people understand that they're supporting things that don't make sense so that they'll stop, I think that we can avoid a lot of that nastiness rather than just hurry up and get through it, because I don't know that we can get through it that way. I don't know if it's even possible. I think that we can avoid a lot of it, and I think that it's important that we, you know, do what we can as individuals to begin to create the kind of world that we want to live in, and not just, you know, make it somebody else's problem to do that, because none of us came here to sit and watch.
Nope. And those people that did are already gone. So I'm excited. I'm ready.
Yeah, it is exciting. I mean, it's exhilarating, I think. And I know that a lot of people have the glasses half empty mentality. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on that's not good, but if you know what is good and you know where to find it, then you know where to direct other people to it and keep spreading it, and that's really important. And again, I mean, there's just all this exciting stuff that is just waiting for us, and I think that we deserve it. I really do, and I think that we can get there. And so, again, it's not... Don't be brave out of fear. Be brave out of love, because there's something really incredible just out of reach, you know?
Right. It's definitely a journey. As we start to wind things down and to put some of that back into reach for people, let's plug anything and everything Crystal Clark, because you've got a book out since our last official talk. And stuff in the works. So let's make sure those who are reaching and doing what they can with what they can, let's offer your piece of the puzzle.
Sure. Well, my website is www.thesolsociety.com, and that stands for the Soul Society. And the first book is Who Are We Really 101, Return of the Shaman. The first book is nonfiction. It's a study guide that goes over all of this in a lot of the ways that we talked about. It's important to me, again, to meet people on common ground, so there's not a lot of, you know, fancy high-tech information. It's all about understanding our own connection to the world that we live in and what that means and how it works, how everything is connected to everything else. And then the second book, it's actually part of the Who Are We Really series. It's called Who Are We Really 102, When Tomorrow Comes. But this is actually the beginning of a fictional version because, there are a lot of reasons that I wrote it, but one of them was I know that it's hard for people to imagine what the next stage might look like. You know, what would living like that be like? And so it's a really beautiful story about two different timelines. One of them is, you know, is one fork, one is the other fork. And even though it's fiction, there is a lot of one law technology, or what I refer to as the sacred science technology, built into the story to just kind of give people an idea of if we had this in our everyday life, what could we do with it? How could we live with it? What would that look like? And the other thing I want to talk about is the Soul Project, which is on the website. And it's just a bunch of people who were touched by the material in some way and understand that they have a special gift. Well, everybody has a special gift, first of all, but they're some of the people who realize it. And they want to give it out for free. There's a wide variety of people on there. There are remote healers who are very, very good. There's a fellow who will help you set up blogs and web pages. There's a woman that does natal astrological numerology charts. And originally it was set up on the barter system, not money. And the reason I felt like barter was so important is because it's important for people to feel like they give and receive, that both parties are involved. So there, nobody ever feels like they got more than they should have or they got less than they should have. It was an even exchange. But in a lot of cases, they just want to help for free. So, you know, if you have something you want to barter with, if you know, great. If not, they really just love Team Earth, as I call it, and want to give whatever they can. So, you know, give those people a look-see and take them up on their offer because they're not asking for anything other than to just be there for you. That's all.
I have a larger project in mind that I definitely am looking forward to inserting in that line of thinking that's not ready yet. But I also had another brainstorm. My website, if you're listening to this, everybody knows, is gofindtheothers.com, but it's also simulcast on the Antimatter Radio Zone Network. We're going to find people who have started Thoreauvian self-sufficiency type businesses already and who are doing something that benefits the community, the country, and the planet as a whole. And we are going to promote them in a commercial format anyway. So my first offer...
You know what's so cool about that? Is that goes right back to what we talked about a moment ago, because the more people you send to companies that are doing right by humanity and right by the planet, they'll grow and they're going to need more people, right? They'll provide jobs for people that actually want to help do something right.
Exactly. So yeah, mom and pop businesses, you know, made in America. The products are useful and beneficial through whether it's surviving the transition and or building the next step. We've already got one in the can. Everybody that's heard this by now heard the spot up front. But I want to offer that sentiment and idea to go into the Soul Society, that if any of those folks already there would like a 30-second, 90-second, spot in the front of any of these episodes, to if they have the ability to record something and or type it out, and I can, I'm going to offer that up, a free advertising space.
Oh, that is so awesome. Oh, my gosh. Thank you. That's so awesome.
You're welcome. And the whole mirror paradigm and you know, the fear projection, you know, gets back, you know, dominating tyrants. I think once, you know, people in the broadcast realm start promoting, you know, people, businesses that are trying to change this, we can get that word out even faster. And in turn, these businesses will succeed. And in turn, you know, they can, you know, then refer, you know, other customers to the platforms, you know, that, got them a jump off. And it's the feedback loop, only working in our favor this time.
That's exactly right. That's how it works. We just keep the energy flowing and there's enough for everyone. It keeps going around.
So you live in hell, you have to wonder why it is that people always seem to suffer. In the well, beneath the water, lie the answers to the questions that we ponder. Do we try so hard just to falter? Sacrifices that we make upon the altar. If we learn to come together, then this world can change and we will make things better. Find yourself, find the others. There's a world inside that you will soon uncover. Find yourself, find the others. There's a world out there that wants to be discovered. When you find yourself. So you have no time, follow the leader. There's a goddess in you, I hope you get to meet her. Don't give your soul to no vampires. You need to learn to pull yourself out of the mire. It starts with you. You want a teacher? Then stop believing all the gurus and the preachers. Follow your soul. The heart knows better. When you learn yourself, find yourself, find the others. There's a world inside that you will soon uncover. Find yourself, find the others. There's a world out there that wants to be discovered. When you find yourself. Find your